Welcome to the Home Team Podcast. My name is Steve Carter, and this podcast exists because we want to talk about the intersection of faith and sports, culture, and family. And I'm here with my good friends, Sam Acho, Trey Burton, and today we want to talk a little bit about trash talk. Now, this isn't the kind of trash talk between Michigan and Florida, which we could, or Michigan and Texas, which we could. No, we're going to talk about Russell Westbrook. Guys, did you see last night? We are recording Thursday morning. Last night, Westbrook is leaving the court and a fan decides to dump a box bag of popcorn on Westbrook's head. And Russ, I imagine like the three of us, was not very pleased. I want to start here. What do you guys do? And because I know that you have takes on this story, but also, Sam, you've got to have experiences where you're playing and you hear fans say something. First, what did you feel about the Russ story? And what story from your professional career did that maybe bring to mind that was something similar?
Yeah, with the Russ story, I was just frustrated. I was frustrated because it's almost like, it's almost like players are helpless when it comes to interactions with fans. There's no win. It's a lose-lose. It's like, you know, Jake Paul boxing against Floyd, or it's like, even if you get beat up, it's like, well, shoot, I'm not supposed to win, right? Like, as a player, setting the scene. So Russell Westbrook, the playing for the Wizards, they're losing. He's injured. He's walking off the court because he's hurt his ankle. And as he's walking, a fan from up in the stands bumps a huge thing. He's injured. Like, his team is losing. They're down 0-1, about to be down 0-2. He's a frustrated, sad, devastated. I mean, that's how I would feel. And a fan dumps popcorn on your head. Like, as if that was me, I would have reacted. Like, and his immediate reaction was like, he's like, where is he? Like, people had to hold him back. I would have reacted the same way. And not only because adrenaline and emotion, but it's like, dude, how dare you? I don't even care who you are, but how dare you? And so, but then the problem is when Russell Westbrook reacts that way, it's like, well, what's his problem? And you get paid millions. You should be able to put up with whatever. And so for me, I was that triggered me a little bit, just to be like, okay, how do you respond? Even as a, you know, I don't know if mild mannered is the right way to put it, but it's like, what is the right way to respond to that? Do you walk away? Do you say, oh, shrug it off? Or do you get up in the stands and say, don't you ever dare do that again? What do you do? I know for me, back in college, actually, and before, like, Trey, what do you think about that? Before I even give my little college story, what's your opinion, thoughts?
Well, I mean, first off, I wasn't watching it live. And so I'm on Twitter and I see it and I'm thinking to myself, like, where is he? And like, do you guys remember who they're playing? Like, they're playing Philly. The Sixers. I mean, yeah. Bro, to one point, there's certain fan bases you have to be cautious of and have to be on your toes of, and to a degree. I'm not saying it's right by any means. By no means am I saying it's right or it should ever happen. I think the guy should be banned from the arena for life, maybe all Philly sports stadiums for life. But you have to understand that things like that are more prone to happen in certain areas, you know. And then the second thing I would say is one of the toughest things to do, from my opinion as an athlete, is turn in the heat of battle, is turn the warrior mode, the you know, gladiator mode off. You know, obviously he's not fighting out there, he's playing basketball, but you have that, I don't know what you would call it, but something turns on when you're on the court. You know, something turns on when you step in between the lines in on a football field. And it's the hardest thing to do is to be full-fledged emotionally, physically into a game and then get disrespected by someone not in the game. And especially when you're not even, he's walking in the tunnel. He doesn't expect anything like that to happen. And on top of that, you're hurt. So I could only imagine just the, like you said, Sam, the range of emotions, you know, that he's going through, from playing a game to losing a game to injured to walking off the court. Like, none of those four things does he want to be doing at the time, but and especially as a competitor. And then to get stuff thrown on top of him is just, you know, absolutely wild.
Yeah, I know. Just to speak to that point, Trey, that competitive, that switch, that light, but whatever you want to call it. Two quick stories. One, we were playing Cleveland back, you know, 2017 or so. And like, you know, you're just in the zone. Like, I was just in the zone. And like, so much so where And I already had a sack on whoever it was, the quarterback. I think it might have been Kaiser at the time before Baker. So maybe the year, yeah, maybe 17. And I was just feeling it. And so much so where it was like, I felt like a wolf, like hunting. That's literally, there's no better way to describe it. I was a wolf and I felt like a wolf and I was hunting. And this thought came to my mind. And the thought was like, smell blood. Like coaches always say, smell blood. And that was in my mind. Instantly, I was like, and I was like in it. And I could take it out on somebody. But imagine game over and you're still in that zone. Someone does something and you can't respond. You can't take it out on. I mean, like, it's like, how do you control your emotions? What do you do? You know, fast forward a year later, now we're in practice. And I mean, I got to that same mindset because I was like, man, bump all this. Yes, I'm a believer. Yes, I follow Jesus, but I'm going to destroy everyone in front of me. There's one of my friends, we were joking about this, but she was like, she plays basketball in the WNBA. And we were talking about competition and like, how do you compete well and all these stuff. She was like, man, glory be to God, but I'm nice. Like, I'm going to smoke you, period. And it's like, that's the way I believe a Christian should think. You know what I mean? It's an athlete. It's not like, well, you can win and it's going to be okay. And God still loves me. It's like, no, I'm going to give God glory with every single one of my gifts. Glory be to God, but you don't want to try me. You will get destroyed. And I did that. It was in practice. People probably didn't like this. We could talk about practice etiquette later if you want. It was training camp. It was training camp, dog. It was one-on-one, tight ends versus, were you, this is 2018, so you were there.
Yeah. Did you have your gloves on already?
Trey didn't have his.
Did practice start? Because I didn't put mine on until like fifth period of practice.
So Trey, we were doing one-on-ones versus the tight ends, outside linebackers versus tight ends. So it was like Adam Shaheen, all those guys. I don't know if you remember. And I was just frustrated and mad, upset.
Yeah, I remember.
Okay, boom. So maybe you could tell the story. But like, I felt like I was beating the people in front of me, and as defensively we were, but the head coach, who's an offensive guy, was calling the plays in favor of the offense. It was like trying to first to like 10, right? So it was like 1-1, 2-1. I'm like, okay, what's going on? Because we were winning. We've won all three. And so anyways, I beat the guy in front of me. And then the coach is like, that's a win for the offense, the head coach. And I get up and I just start cussing up, and I'm like, nah, come on. And I'm like at the head coach. And my linebacker coach is like, Sam, chill. I'm not chilling. That's not fair. What he's doing is not fair. And the head coach. And my coach is like, Sam, that's the head coach. You need to chill. And I'm like, but what do y'all want? I thought y'all wanted me to compete. I thought y'all wanted to see passion and fire and what do you want? Do you want the nice, soft little, hey, I'm here? Or do you want a guy who's fiery and passionate? But he just said, dude, you have to learn how to turn it off. And so for me, that's what I probably miss. That's one of the things I miss the most about playing, is just that ability to flip it on and go. The second thing I miss is the music. We can talk about that later.
Locker room music.
We can talk about that later. That's just that locker, bro. I get all my rap music from the locker room. I get all the new songs, the new, like the sheesh, all the stuff that people do now. I get it from the locker room. And I feel like it's almost like I'm an old man. I'm not old, but that's the second thing I miss. Anyways, that's my little spiel.
Trey, you mentioned the Philly crowd, because the Philly crowd, I mean, the only time I've ever seen Kobe almost cry was NBA All-Star Weekend back in Philly, and he had beaten the year before AI, and I think he's coming home. I mean, he's coming home to Lower Marion,
yeah.
And he's super pumped to be there and think he's going to be welcomed, and he gets introduced, and the whole arena is like, boo, and he's like, and you can see, like, he was shocked. I mean, and that's when I realized, oh, Philly's different, man. Philly
way
is
different.
There's no, and then it's like, how do you prepare yourself to go in to play Philly when you've got fans who can say whatever? Now, you've played at Philly, Sam. You've played at Philly, Trey. You played for Philly. Is there any other place, any other environment, college or NFL, where you're like, man, I have to have a little bit more mental awareness going into this space, because I know I could get triggered because some dude's gonna say something after third quarter and 19 glasses of beer.
19. Those are doubles glasses, by the way, not just singles. But yeah, I mean, bro, Philly's just different. I don't know how to really explain it. It's a different atmosphere. I've heard so many stories. I've experienced so many things, you know, from Philly. I remember just everybody I talked to. So like if I talk to another player, say I go to a different team, I say, you know, where have you played? And I'm like, oh, I played in Philly and Chicago. And like, oh, you played in Philly. Like that place is crazy. Like those fans are horrible, you know, for an opposing team standpoint. My favorite Philly story, I'm talking to Trey Thomas. He played left tackle when Donovan McNabb was a quarterback. So, you know, when they were pretty good. And I think he said he was a rookie, and he's telling me this story. My second year in Philly, he was a rookie and they're in the huddle, pretty big game. And he says he's looking up. He's like, he's listening to the quarterback, like turning his head sideways, listening to the quarterback, but like gazing in the stands. And this was in the Vet, like the old Philly stadium. Yeah. And so he's listening to the play and he's looking up at like the third level, or I guess the highest level. And he sees a fan throw another fan over the third level balcony into the second level balcony. And he's sitting there listening to the play and he sees a fan get thrown and he like points up in the sky like, dude, he just got thrown over the balcony. And he just says he remembers McNabb like hitting him in the helmet, like, bro, pay attention, I'm calling the player, like, listen up, you know, like something like that. But he's like, but that's Philly for you, bro. I mean, dude, they have a jail at the bottom of the stadium. It's just out of control.
What does that mean? Like an actual jail?
No, like actual jail. Like there's so many fights and so many things go on in the stands during the games, especially like what I would literally, if I would advise any friend or family member to never wear an opposing team jersey in the stadium. And it's not like a threat. It's not like, you know, like legit, like don't do it. It's not cool. And that's not good for your health at all. But they're just wild, man. They're really passionate, you know, about their team. I think, you know, to a degree, overly passionate. I mean, look what happened yesterday to Westbrook, you know. But there's no one that I can compare, no, at no level. But I would say there's a couple schools in the SEC that are pretty wild. You know,
example, obviously someone, give us Tennessee, a story. Tell me what happened when you were there.
I don't have any stories like that. I don't have any, not that I remember off the top of my head. I just know like Tennessee, Alabama is pretty crazy. And then Texas A&M is the complete opposite. They're like the nicest fans in the world. And I remember I played in the first SEC game at Texas A&M 2012. And we're on the bus. We're so used to stuff getting thrown at us and the bus is getting pushed, rocked back side to side, that we show up at Texas A&M. We're driving to the stadium and everybody's giving us a thumbs up from like a Texas A&M side. Like, who are these guys? Like, they just came from the Big 12. This is the soft football they play over there. The Big 12, thumbs up. Like, am I supposed to be intimidated by a thumbs up? And come to find out that's their gig'em. Like, that's their motto or whatever, gig'em. And the thumbs up, I'm not scared of a thumbs up, but yeah, that's how they do it at Texas A&M. And shoot, LSU, my favorite college story. We're sitting there, we're pregame LSU. They have the live tiger going around the field. I don't know if you guys know about that, but they have a live tiger in a cage that they pull around the visitor opponent side warm up. And they're, you know, they poke the tiger and he screams. You're like, bro, that's a legit tiger right there in the cage on the field. Whatever. He's going around. We're warming up. And this little kid, little legit, man, like 4 or 5 years old, is at the game standing on the fence. And you think like he's watching and like in amazement of like how athletic you the team is and the guys are running around. But like, look, he has no clue what's going on. And I remember him saying, hey, Hines. And one of my teammates, I'm standing right next to the guy. Hey, Hines. And Hines is this swole, like genetic dude that like doesn't have to lift anything. And he's like one of the biggest guys on the team, right? This is a freak from a genetic standpoint. And Hines, you hear this little kid, Hines. And he turns around. I mean, it's a kid, bro. He turns around and the kid goes, you suck. I was crying, dude. I was like boohoo crying on the field because it's legit, man. Like a little kid, you know, you would never expect it from this little white kid just sitting on the fence with his little buddies. Hey, you suck. And dude, just crying, laughing. Hilarious.
Okay, so this, I feel like this brings up a great point, because you do have levels of crazy in you know, Philly fans. And I always think that Philly fans are kind of like Draymond Green. Like you want Draymond on your team. You don't want to play against Draymond. You want him on your team. I feel like you want to play for Philly because they have your back. You don't want
until you're not until you're not
until
good,
you drop a or, pass. Yeah, exactly. Or, yeah. You know what I mean? Like then they're yeah. you're not. But like you think about this, like there's also a whole bunch of clowning that happens in the locker room. You know what I mean? It's like, so it's one thing you got fans who say things that are terrible and the players are like, oh man, ready to go. But then it seems like in the locker room, one of the best parts is y'all just give it to each other. And it's almost like expected. And I feel like I've seen you two go back and forth. And Trey, I feel like, you know, I can see you laughing at Hines, you know, in that moment and then not ever letting him forget it for weeks to come.
Of course.
So talk about that. Talk about that, Trey. Like what's it like when, you know, you show up and there is like on your first team, you know, there is a culture of clowning and it's like, it's celebrated. It's part of being in the family. How do you not take that personally? How do you laugh at that stuff?
I mean, I don't know. I think everything's so tense all the time when you're playing ball that there needs to be some time to let loose and joke around. And
what
like,
you, Trey, one thing hold I, on. What do you mean by that? Everything? Because I think that went over people's heads. I think that because people are just like, oh, y'all just play a game.
Well, like, if you're talking about like from an NFL standpoint, you're trying to make a team. Like, this is how you make a living. Like, this is how, you know, and then like, when you're playing against another team or you're playing in practice, like things get pretty serious. Like I said, what we've been talking about this whole podcast is like, there's competition, you know, there's emotions that are involved. And so it's really important in my opinion to be able to step away from the emotions and be able to laugh and have a good time and joke around. And so one thing I've learned is early on, especially I guess maybe probably in high school, early on in college is like, you're either getting clowned or you're clowning and you have to learn how to have thick skin, and the guys that can't take the clowning get clowned on even more until you realize that, like, until you're able to play the game. And you have, it's kind of like a sense or like a different type of language you have to learn and be able to understand in locker rooms that, like, dude, it's gonna happen, you know. And obviously there's boundaries and you can't, you know, go, and they do get crossed to a degree, and that's why you hear about people fighting, you know, or you might not hear about it, but there's people that fight in the locker room against each other. But yeah, there's everybody's always clowning. And like one thing I've learned is like over time, like doesn't matter who you are. I remember, shoot, I was getting a workout. It was pro day my senior year after my senior year in college. And bro, at Florida, we just used to clown each other like all the time, nonstop. You know, every single, there was rarely ever like a serious conversation outside of football. And so we're at pro day. I have a workout with the Patriots. And so Bill Belichick's there with Josh McDaniels. Belichick has like this floral button down t-shirt, like doesn't look like a coach like at all, and like obviously we all know who Belichick is. The first time I see him, he introduces himself, I introduce myself, I said, what you doing after this, you going to the beach? He was like, no, I'm here strictly for football. And I was like, oh my bad, bro. Like, I'm sorry, but like, bro, like that's what I learned really, really early on. Like, you're get clown, like you have to clown or else you're going to get clowned. And so I mean, dude, I've had, you know, multiple other times, but Sam, you know me, bro, like I'm going to clown you. And it's all fun games. Like, I'm not serious. I wasn't serious about him going to the beach, but like he had a floral shirt on and flip flops and, you know, cargo shorts. Like, bro, what else are you going to be doing?
I'm just picturing this right now. Bill Belichick.
No hoodie.
No hoodie.
No
floral shirt, coming to do business. Short three answer words. Yes. No, I'll be there. And then Trey's like, what's up, man? You about to go to the beach?
What you doing after this, bro? You going to the beach? We're in Florida. We're in the swamp. You know what I mean? Like, that's not a far off question to ask. I didn't think.
So I love what you said, the high pressure situation. So we're getting ready to play in the national championship in college versus Alabama. And I mean, it was, we had fun, but we like Trey said, like we, and it's culture too, right? Like predominantly black teams, like, and culture is like, you laugh, you Jones, people call it, you kind of crack jokes. It's just like, hey, it's way term of endearment. And I don't know if it was like this at your school, Trey, with tight ends, but like a lot of the, we had big tight ends. They'd kind of, mm-hmm. It almost would be like, hey, you're like a step away from playing offensive line. Yeah. And tight ends were kind of sensitive about that, right? Not all of them, but the ones we played with. And so we were literally at a practice 3 days, 4 days before the national championship. And they had this music going on, and we, you know, music playing, instrumentals. And as we stretch, oftentimes there's 90 guys on the team. So you have different pockets. Guys will just be freestyling or kind of rapping over the beat. And I'll, but there's one guy, his name is Dan Buckner. He played receiver. He was a big receiver. He was one step away from a tight end. And we joked about him on that, but he just started rapping about this one tight end on our team whose name was Ahmad. But like, he called him Fat Ahmad. Fat Ahmad. Hey, and everybody's like, hey, Fat Ahmad. And then his first line, and I still laugh. He was like, the beat dropped, and he was like, Fat Ahmad eating all the Debbie cakes and donuts. And it was like he couldn't live it down. Like, but it was like, if you hear somebody called fat or ugly or whatever, it was outside the locker room. It's like, hey, hold on. Like, you got to be politically correct. But literally, like, I think the most common phrase we gave to one another was like, you're ugly in the locker room. And so it was just, but I miss it. Like, I legitimately at my heart of hearts miss it. Now, granted, there were, because I kind of teetered on the fence. I didn't know how to play that game. I didn't. I grew up, you know, like predominantly white high school. But the church I went to was predominantly black. And, you know, it was just kind of like, I wasn't used to it. And so when I came to college, kind of, and then NFL, like, I tried to kind of mind my own business and do my own thing, but I had to learn how to put a guard up. And so to keep from getting hurt, if you will, or getting laughed at or getting mocked. And so I remember freshman year, we didn't grow up getting Jordans. Like, I was like, Adidas, let me go to, I forget what these stores are. They're not even open now, like Oshman's or whatever these stores are, to get shoes. And I think my sister got me some black, like, I don't know if they were actually Jordans, but shoes that had the little Michael Jordan thing on it.
Were they Shaqs?
No, they weren't Shaqs. Trey Burton. Trey's trying to make a joke. They weren't Shaqs. But they were fake J's, is what people called them. They were fake J's. So they weren't like the real Jordan. They weren't one of the numbered ones, but yeah. They were like, They were flights. Yeah. And so when I say I got clowned every single day for my fake J's, to the point where we went to practice one day, at least I went to practice. I don't know what they were doing, how they did this. I came back. I couldn't find my shoes. Where are my shoes? I want to go home. Where are my shoes? I look at this kind of these poster board, like the tack boards are on the, in the locker room. And my shoe, one of my shoes is tacked to the board. And in the locker room, it says, no fake J's allowed. And I'm like, so anyways, like, and I kind of laughed. And I think those fake J's are no longer in my possession. They have been released.
I hope so.
They've been acquitted. But anyways, like, I miss that, man. Like, the culture, the, like, be able to laugh and joke, to be able to, like, love one another, but also, like, talk about, you know, your college team or your whatever. Like, Trey's a little tight end, and, you know, so it's like, come on, man. You should not be in the NFL. Like, maybe you should still be in college. You look like, you know what I mean? That's kind of like the things that people say, you know?
They say some wild, wild stuff, and there's always that one dude on the team that's just, like, nonstop. Go hard, clowning, not like literally nonstop. Even while he's sleeping, he's clowning somebody, and you got to avoid him at all times unless you're able to go get some kickback to him. But no, those are the best times, man. Best times ever for sure.
You know, it's amazing. I heard this story. This business guy in Texas, and he kind of bred deer for the meat, and then would sell the meat, venison, all that stuff. But he found out that the antlers, there was actually that he could sell, cut them off and sell overseas, and he'd make even more money than the actual meat. And so he started to do that. But something happened the next year in the herd was that there were fewer actual deer because they didn't have their antlers, and they went to go fight, and they just were like getting concussed, brain damage, dying, because deer just want to go at each other. And what this guy was saying, that he was telling me the story, was those antlers are almost like this, like, rules of engagement. There's this sense it makes them stronger. Like, and you remove that, and all of a sudden it's just dudes just cracking into each other. And it actually affects the herd for years and seasons, and affected this guy's bank account. What's amazing is somehow in the locker room, there is this rules of engagement, you know, and there are guys who overstep, but for the most part, it's like, oh yeah, there's Trey. He's going to say something. So don't do anything stupid in front of Trey Burton, because he's going to say something, you know, hey, just do your job. You know what I mean? Cause, I do think that is something that is so beautiful, Sam. And I agree, like being in those locker room moments, like listening to new music, you know, the stuff that you hear, the stories. I mean, you have to, it's a different sense of being on your toes, because some dude might say something, whereas in the game, you're on your toes, like you're ready to go. But here it's like, okay, I'm just looking. What's somebody going to say that I could use in like 2 seconds to give right back to him? That's another thing, though, is then you go out into the real world, and then you got to be like, you know, being interviewed, and you're like, oh, I can't walk up to Bill Belichick and be like, hey, bro, you going to the beach after this? Look at you, man.
Hey, and I claim, and then I believe this. I don't really believe it, but I believe that that's the reason why I didn't go to New England, because I clowned them. It has nothing to do with it. But that, yeah, I tell myself that, and it makes me sleep at night. That's the reason why they didn't draft me in the draft, and I went undrafted.
But there's truth behind that, though, Steve. Like, how do you handle conflict well? Like, take out the well. How do you handle conflict? Because I think so many people, like, we tiptoe around things and we don't speak the truth. Like, people say there's an ounce of truth in every joke. My teammates were joking about my shoes, but it was almost like, hey, Sam, like, you're in the NFL now. You don't have to buy fake Jordans anymore. Like, you don't have to, like, you can upgrade yourself, right? Like, you can, you know, yeah, get a haircut, right? You can, like, Trey, go lift some weights. You know what I mean? I'm kidding. But, like, how do you handle conflict? Well, I come from a family, like, Nigerian culture, like, when people talk, it's like they're yelling. You know what I mean? It's like, and there's nothing gets unspoken. Like, you did this, you're wrong here, you need to address this. And what are you doing? Where are you going? What do you, you know, and that's just it. But it's like, that's love. That is love, because they see something that's wrong and they immediately address it, like without fail. Immediately, it's addressed. Whether it's like, "Hey, man, you put on a couple pounds." Like with women, it's like, "Man, you need to change your diet." Like from when, like mom to her daughter, or daughter to her mom, right? My mother-in-law came in town maybe two, 3 weeks ago, and we hadn't seen her in a while. And my wife saw her. This is her mom. Was like, "Hey, let's, like, you don't look like you used to look. Let's change our diet. Let's be better." And in a week, 2 weeks, she lost like 7 pounds. You know what I mean? It was like, so it's like, as opposed to like, well, let me just not say anything because I don't want to hurt their feelings. No, what I'm learning is that true love calls out what's wrong. And obviously people say speak the truth in love, but so many people don't even speak the truth. They just love. And that's one thing I say it all the time, but like, I do respect about Trey, because Trey will tell you exactly how it is, period. And he might wrap it in a joke, but he'll tell you exactly how it is. Whereas I'm trying to get better at, like, I'm like, oh, I don't want to hurt their feelings. Or it's like, no, I need you to tell me. If I'm wrong, tell me. You know what I mean? Like, if football isn't my thing, let me know, coach. Right? Like, let me know. Like, as opposed to like, well, yeah, you're going to maybe be signed. Nah, if I'm done, I'm done. I might be way better at something different. So how do you take it, and how do you receive? How do you give it, and how do you receive it?
That's so good. And again, I mean, I think this is fascinating, because in sports, there's so many different layers. You know, you've got Philly fan to player. You've got player to player. And then even Trey, you've got Trey to coach, or, you know, what we saw in the WNBA, you know, you've yes. got
Can
you've
I
got
tell that coach. Story real quick?
Yeah, I so, set it up.
So Liz Cambage, she's a plays in the WNBA. She's like a center. They were playing the Connecticut Sun, and I guess the coach for the Sun wasn't, you know, the refs weren't calling fouls on Liz. And the coach was like, come on, man, what do you want us to do? She's 300 pounds, what the coach said. And Liz heard that, and she's like a beast. She's dominant player. She heard that, and she didn't say anything at the time. Afterwards, she got on Instagram Live and was like, first of all, I got on the scale. I'm 235, number one. Number two, I'm 6'8", right? Number two, I look good. But even more than that, and this is what she said, but Trey, I love to hear our opinions too. She's like, you're a coach talking to me. I'm in the zone. I'm playing against my people. And yes, I talk trash to my opponents, maybe even to my teammates, but now I got a coach talking trash to me. What am I supposed to do? Trey, what do you think? What would you have done if somebody said something to you?
Well, like, speaking from experience, on one of the teams I was on in the past, there was a coach, bro, that just nonstop going at other teams' players, like nonstop, bro, just saying outlandish stuff every time or anytime they were in the vicinity, like on our side of the numbers. You know what I mean? Like, you got the field, within you got numbers. Yeah, within like earshot. As long as you can hear what the coach is saying, like, he's going to say something to him. And I'll never forget, he's talking all this trash to this dude, and game's over, right? And dude from the other team starts is literally looking for the coach on the team that I'm on, like looking for the guy, like seeking him out to find him. And this happened on two occasions. One occasion, the player found a coach that looked just like him and like tried to square up with him. And the coach that looked just like him was like, "Oh, like what is happening? Like, what's going on?" Right. And they end up defusing the situation. Second time happens, the player finds a legit coach that's talking trash, and the legit coach goes all of a sudden, "Oh, respect your game. You're, you know, a heck of a player. Like, love what you do on the field." Right. Bro. And I'm watching one of the ones I saw. I was on the team, and then the year before it happened, I wasn't on the team, and just crying, you know, listening to this story. But bro, like, you can't expect to say stuff like that to opposing. First of all, there's no business. And I think this goes on from my kid's age now, 6, 8, and 4, to professional level. Like, bro, there's no business for an opposing coach to talk to another player on another team. Like, there's nothing you can say at all, unless it's, you know, good game or, you know, great play or what. But bro, like, other than that, like, I don't think there's any place for a coach from an opposing team to talk to a player.
Dude, what about a coach from the actual team? I'm talking about for kids. Like, so here's what I mean. I was playing soccer, 6 years old, maybe 7, first couple years playing soccer. And I stopped because it was too much running. I was a big kid. It was too much running. And we were at practice one day, and my dad came to practice, and the coach was like, he wasn't cussing us out. We were 6, but like just yelling and almost berating some of the kids, you know, come on. Yeah. Just like being outlandish and outrageous. I was the kid, one of the kids. And my dad saw that, and immediately, I talked to you all about culture, immediately said, "Hey, don't you ever dare talk to my son like that or any of these kids. What are you doing? Who are, like, what's your deal? You've got issues." What do we do as parents of children when we see, and I'm sure y'all saw that video a couple weeks ago of those, excuse me, those two kids, probably 8 years old, helmets on, full shoulder pads, and just complete colliding. Coach is like, yeah. Like, what do you do as a parent if that's the culture of coaching?
I mean, for me, these kids these days, I feel like they have so much pressure on them, and every kid is different. And I think what's important is that you've got emotionally healthy parents, but you also have emotionally healthy coaches. I think what made Phil Jackson so great is that he could find and call out the greatness in Dennis Rodman, get to and call out the greatness in Kobe, get to and call out the greatness in Jordan and Pippen. Like, you've got to be able to see these kids as different. But too often it's like, when they're kids, it's like, "Hey, you're getting on my plan and you're going to do it my way." And especially when they're 6, I get it when it starts getting into junior high. I get it when it starts getting into high school. But like, I still think there's way too much pressure that we're putting on some of these kids at a younger age, that I go, this, what you've done is you've taken a game that should be first and foremost fun at this age and something that develops character and develops life skills, and now you've attached it to anger and shame and not fun. And so like it misses out. And, you know, I've just seen it happen, you know, and I've had to like get up on the sideline and like walk over to some coaches, you know, and just be like, "Hey, there's another way to do this." And because for me, it's infuriating. One, I see a kid and his head is down, and he doesn't want to play. It frustrates me to no end. You know, I've coached little kids teams. I love it. I feel like it's my inner Jim Harbaugh comes out, and, you know, attack each day with an enthusiasm unknown to mankind. Like, I'll fire them up. I'll hold them by the shoulders and tell them how awesome they are and call out the greatness in them. But like, I'm not gonna put shame
you never,
on them.
You never won a championship though, right?
I did. Orange Monkey Fireballs. We didn't lose, bro. We're unstoppable. Well, greatest like indoor soccer team that has ever been assembled.
I wish you would have picked a better
four
coach
or 5 year olds
to follow than Jim Harbaugh. But yeah, anyways,
maybe Nick Saban.
Get behind me, Saban. That's what I say. It's biblical.
No, but
come
like
at you, bro.
But Steve, to that point, you said for a little kid that's not right. But as you get older, I get it. I don't get it. Even as you get older, I remember I was taking recruiting visits and I went to go visit UVA and I went with my dad once again. Now I'm 18 now, 17, trying to pick colleges. University of Virginia was one of my top schools. And I go there and I'm like, okay, meeting the coach. And it was me and my dad and this coach. And we were kind of watching film and talking about what's the plan, what do you see? And an interaction happened where he grabbed my arm. I'm 6'2", 6'3", 245, whatever, you know. And he grabbed my arm and said, yeah, we're going to do it this way and that way and da 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 and kind of move and almost like pulled me. And I thought, oh, this is what coaches do. It's the next level. It's college. We left. My dad was like, yeah, you're not going there. What do you mean? This is just football. No, it could be done a different way. Fast forward, we go meet with Texas and Mac Brown. You should pick Mac Brown. You'd be like Mac Brown, Steve. But I'm playing. Mac Brown, he said,
Miss Susie?
Hey. Yeah, right. But he said, he's like, Mac Brown. When we met with him, he said, I'm not going to cuss at you, nor will any of my coaches. We are going to coach you. We are going to love you. We're going to bring out the best in you, but we are not going to disrespect you. As soon as he said that, it was like, where can I sign? It can be done from Little League to middle school to high school to college to the pros. I don't care if you're in the WNBA as a coach or if you're in the NFL. It can be done. There is a different way, like Steve said, but I think we need to address not necessarily the elephant in the room, but like some of these coaches have issues, right? That coach, that little six-year-old, when I was, you know, coach, like he had anger issues. And I was six and I could tell something was wrong with him. So my dad didn't act like that. This guy had issues. Face would turn all red. After I'm like, I'm six, you know? And those issues, if they don't, and even we can end here. Like, so Steve, your book just got available for pre-release. It's called The Thing Beneath the Thing. So if anyone's, all the people listening, like go to thethingbeneaththething.com. I got it right?
Yeah, well.
And go and pre-order Steve's book. But I got a chance to read that book early. And Trey's got a joke right now, but I'm not going to let you say it because I got to finish.
No jokes.
Trey, stay with you. But it talks about like what these potholes in our lives, like these things that we get triggered, whether we're coaches or parents or Christians or, you know, I mean, all those could be intertwined, but it's like, what's the thing beneath the thing? Why is this coach yelling irate and then berating six-year-old kids? And then, oh, by the way, why when I became a parent, am I doing the same thing to my two-year-old son? What's the thing beneath the thing? How come this coach on this team, Tony Dungy, for an example, can win championships with love? And this coach on this team has to cut down every single player he sees. What's the thing beneath the thing? And Steve, you could talk about it for a second if you want, but like y'all need to go pre-order that book. It literally just got available for pre-order and it's top of the Amazon list. Like y'all go check that book out. But it's just so relevant because the thing beneath the thing for me, sometimes the thing that triggers me is this deal of like, ooh, am I enough? And so if my son does something that makes me look bad, it's no longer about him. It's about me not feeling like I'm enough. I wonder what it was like for that coach when I was six, or better yet, that coach when I was 18, grabbing my arm and saying, you got to do like, what makes you think you can try and grab and shake another grown man? You know what I mean? Imagine if I was Russell Westbrook, get your hands off. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. So anyways, y'all go pre-order the book. But anyway, I just had to get that off my chest. Cause that coach, man, he ran me. I'm like, and I could see it. I was six. And I could feel, I didn't know how to verbalize it. And Steve, you talk about this all the time. Like, you know, kids have great, actually, can you say it? Like a thing about kids?
Just kids are very perceptive. They're just crappy interpreters of reality. So they perceive something, but it's hard for them to interpret properly what's going on. For instance, I look at that situation right now. And when you're six, Sam, you've got that coach probably had a really, really difficult relationship. And again, I'm assuming, but like when he was a kid with his dad playing sports, and didn't necessarily know how to do that. And this is maybe what was shown to him is what you're supposed to do. The problem is when we get triggered, we have all of this energy and it's got to go somewhere. So you saw it with Russ, you know, walking off, and he's like, part of that energy is because he's in the game. And now he's like, it's got to have an outlet. And if we don't have healthy escapes, man, we are going to escape. And so that's what the whole book is about, is just getting aware of what triggers us so that we can be healthy, whether in the locker room, whether on the field, whether in our homes, whether on the streets, whether in our churches, so that we can be people who are more whole and like holy and spiritually healthy, and not people who are just reacting and causing more pain and collateral damage in our world. So
because so many of us, sorry for interrupting, but so many of us have these potholes we don't even realize. We have these issues, these craters we don't even realize what's going on. And I was one of those, I still am. I'm just now realizing, oh, that was the thing beneath the thing for me. This is why I went there or did this or responded this way or acted this way. It wasn't because of that person. It was because of something inside of me.
Yeah.
And so I think the more people that get that message and start to get beneath the surface and find out what is the trigger that makes me, like so many people like are alcoholics. Like I've got a friend who literally drinks every single day, every day. And he was like, I just like wine. It's like, no, there was something deeper. And he started to get into the bottom of it, right? Some women have issues with like, man, image. And men do too, right? How do I look? Some people, they go to like pornography or drugs, or they just want to escape. Let me just take a flight somewhere. But what are you running from? And I think the sooner we get to the bottom of that, the healthier we will be as parents, as friends, as coaches, as leaders, as teachers. But we got to get to the thing beneath the thing.
I'll end with this. You know, this is why Trey gets so triggered by the University of Michigan and Harbaugh, because we started doing those satellite camps, and Harbaugh started going into Florida and started going into SEC territory, and all the SEC lost their mind. They got triggered. They didn't know what to do, but they were really nervous and scared of Harbaugh. And Harbaugh's got a shirt off running around. And
what,
I just saw
for what it. Reason? For what reason? Why are we nervous and scared?
Recruiting. Oh, okay. Yeah, recruiting. It's just like, but you just see it. You just see the response. And, you know, I mean, and I think for all of us, like, we've got to fight to be healthy. We have to fight to be mentally present, because if not, our brokenness will catch up to us. So, hey, friends, thanks so much for tuning in to the Home Team Podcast. Trey Burton, thank you for the stories you shared. Sam, for what you shared. Follow us online. Let us know. Subscribe, share. Hey, we're trying to do more on Instagram to engage you all, and Twitter. Let us know. Let us know what you want to hear us chop it up about. But we hope you have a great, great week. And if someone throws a bag of popcorn on you, you know what you got to do. You know what you got to do. Have a great, great week. See you next Thursday, guys. Grace and peace.